Stahls.com. If you're ready to take your custom apparel to the next level, Stahls is the leader in heat printing solutions. They've got a code too, Hustler20, Hustler20, that saves 20% on your next DTF transfer order. Equipment, transfers, or support for your business, they are there. Also, they are running an incredible amount of live events that I find very fun and helpful to be at, partially learning everything, but also partially picking up and meeting a bunch of the people there. So that's really cool. Definitely check that out. GraphX Source. GraphX offers industry-leading outsourcing options for your shop by truly becoming part of your team. They plug and play with Printavo and any other shop management softwares. When it comes to SEPs, mockups, creative art, order management, digitizing, back office admin, and customer service, they have been around for over 40 years in the game. Hit them up and use the code PrintavoPod24 to get 50% off your first order to give it a try. They've obviously got full-time staffing solutions and then ad hoc as well, plus tons of other stuff. Check it out, graphxsource.com. Last but not least, Easy Way. Easy Way is continuing their monthly giveaway, $250. Easy win. Go to easyway.com/giveaway, put a reminder the first of each month and drop in your email address. They make reclaiming screens a whole lot easier with their systems, chemicals, and equipment. Also, an incredible team there too. I mean, they've got a really, really great support system to be able to help you as a shop be able to grow your business, especially in the reclaim side. So don't miss the giveaway. Go to easyway.com/giveaway. $250 in product credit is the easiest way. All right, let's jump on in.
All right, Ron.
We're here.
How are you?
I'm good, man. It's been one heck of a year, you know, but I'm here. I'm back at it in full swing.
Tell me about that. Why has it been a crazy year?
I had an unfortunate accident that happened last May that changed my life upside down. It was a total freak accident, something that I didn't see coming. It's something very unfortunate, but I ended up with a severe concussion. And because of the concussion, I had some really bad side effects, such as like memory loss, constant fatigue, and like eye twitching and some peripheral vision issues, right? And some speech issues. So for the last year and 3 months, I've been in physical therapy, but not like you hurt your elbow physical therapy, more like neurological physical therapy. So it was a blessing in disguise because it really uncovered a lot of things that were solid about my company and things that needed to be fixed, right? Because when something like that happens, the company must still provide and, you know, move and go. And I don't know what it is. There's always something inside of a person that says, you know, like 3 years ago, hey, the company shouldn't be about you anymore. It should be about the company and it should be able to operate on itself without Ron anymore. And something clicked like 3 years ago. So I started putting those strategies in place. And when this unfortunate event happened, things went on without me having to be in the place. Everyone who was, you know, in the chain of command picked it up and I'm like, wow, thank you. And they have, you know, kept things moving while I was healing, basically.
Are you doing better now?
Yeah. Some things aren't going to fully return and it's completely fine. The employees and the staff and everybody who has been running the company did a phenomenal job keeping everything moving, you know, no significant loss, which was great, but no growth either. So that being said, now I'm like, hey, I feel great. I want to come back. And now I go there every day and I'm like, well, you're doing such a good job. Like, what? I'm not getting in your way. Like, I don't want to get in your way. So now this is where I come up with the better ideas of how to, you know, give them better opportunities with financial budgeting and coming up with more employee incentives and things to help the company for the culture of it versus me having to be in the in and outs of the daily activities. So it's cool.
Wow. There's a lot I want to jump into, but the thought of jump starting the business is kind of interesting, as in, okay, I'm back in, you know, no growth. I want to start to get to, I'm assuming you want to start to achieve growth. Maybe not. You tell me. What are you, actually, let me ask you that. Do you want to have growth or are you fine revenue where it's at from last year, year before?
it's just so wild to see the last 3 years, if you were to look. And you know, I talk to other shops constantly, and everybody's feeling the pains. Like, you're busy when it's supposed to be slow. There's just no way to, I mean, even following your metrics, I could see when shops are busy, when they're slow. Everything's just been all over the place. And it's crazy, you know, to see that. And from where I started, I'm going on my 20th year, right? So I started in my college dorm, and now I have this huge facility with 40 employees, and we're always cooking and moving. And it's kind of like, yeah, you keep getting bigger, but then your expenses get bigger, and now you need a bigger building. Well, you know, real estate today versus 3 years ago has 90 to 100% or sometimes 300% doubled itself, you know? So me buying my building in COVID and now what it's worth, I can't find a bigger building and afford where we're at, you know, currently what we're paying. So it's, yeah, you scale, employees come, there's costs that are more involved. You know, your utilities are climbing, you know, every 6 months, things are going up. So I don't know, like, I want to, we love to grow, but the growth doesn't necessarily have to be with getting more jobs coming through the door. The growth for me that I want to see for the company is just having a more solid foundation of customer base that will be reliable, that can keep sending POs, and you're giving them the better satisfaction and customer service that they're staying and they're not just leaving. We grew from like a more business to business model before COVID. And then when COVID hit, we went more into contract. So we were like 20% contract pre-COVID. We're now 95% contract work, you know? So we have seven major companies feeding our company, and they give us a lot of work. And then in return, the local landscape suffers because we just can't take all of that upfront customer service, sales, art for smaller orders. When you weigh it out, it's like, keep taking the big dog stuff and, you know, you're having the local people come in, but you're spending 10 times as much work on the front end, you know, with more costly employees. So it's a balance. It's a balance.
Financially, in feeling good where you're at, do you feel like the business say, okay, profitability wise, I feel good where we're at and I'm fine. We don't need to continue scaling. Is that what you're saying? Because like you said, if you do more, you need more space, you need more people or whatever, it sounds like you may not want to do that. So is everything from a financial perspective, like, or are you looking to squeeze out a stronger bottom line with what you have? Or what do you think? How do you think about that from a financial perspective?
Yeah, when you look like the financials perspective, the growth is always going to cost more, right? So, me going out and getting more clients is great, but or we to acquire another business, would that make more sense? So there's some options that I look at. Would it be easier for me just to maybe buy a guy that's looking to retire and take his customers? I'm only going to retrieve maybe 30 to 40%. The rest will go out the pasture. Or again, do you tighten up your bottom line? But everybody should be doing that at this point. Like, you should really be looking at your supplies, your cost, your labor, your overtime, you know, every business should be doing that already. But what more could you squeeze out of that? Like, if you already have that figured out, what more could I squeeze from that, you know, without having to call and heckle, you know, hours a day trying to argue maybe $50 here and there, right? Whereas you could take that same amount of time trying to save the bottom line and put that same time in finding new customers, sending more emails, making more calls, feeling out the landscape, finding somebody that you may be able to buy, maybe buy some more real estate in the company. Right. So it's like, me personally, no, but the employees, you could give them those tasks. Hey, send out 5 more emails today, send out 10 more emails, would strategize this financially. You know, I already got to the fence where I didn't want to look over, but my personality, I had to look over that fence, right? It's just a nature inside of me. It's when's enough? When is enough, right?
Sure. Do you feel like you're enough? You have enough now after going through that, the health?
It clearly showed, yes. You know, it was great. A blessing in disguise. You know, you keep reaching for the growth, the wealth, and the business to be itself profitable. But when something like that happens where everything stops, you realize you get some time off finally after, you know, whatever, 18 years of going hard, right? There's some things that work-life family balance, right? Now I'm like, hey, I found passions and other things that helped me get through this injury. And I love what I do every day, you know, with Talk Shirty, but it's like, that's a better focus for me, you know? So That's a tough question, you know, but I just see the company could go, keep going. We stay where we're at, but my employees are hungry. They want growth, you know, and I don't want to be in their way. So it's a battle, you know, they want to grow. Right, let's do it, you know. But this is the realistic breakdown. And we had a meeting actually yesterday about, you know, growth within the company. I said, fine, you want to add another press? That'll cost an assistant, another runner, another dryer hand. That's four employees. Add it up. Is that press going to be able to provide for those four employees and the payment on the equipment and the overhead that it takes to run it? Or are we just going to absorb that? Just so we said we got another press.
Yeah, that's a good question, actually, because staff always want something else to help. It could be, hey, I'm overloaded. I need somebody here to help me. Can you hire this role? Sounds like equipment as well for you. It sounds like you're sharing in a little more transparent around numbers in terms of what this would cost and what it exactly means. What happened with that conversation? How'd it go?
So that's where it came down to. I said, look, we have a company goal. We're trying to get to this number. If we add this press, is it going to reduce overtime hours? Is it going to reduce, you know, employees being fatigued, having to work an extra hour a day? Tell me, when you come to me with the decision, when my managers and supervisor, tell me why this would be a solid add to our arsenal in our print shop. Tell me why and give me a breakdown of what customers in affiliate. Did you find a customer affiliate, or is it just here to put a Band-Aid on a wound temporarily and you're just going to keep tacking that Band-Aid over and over and over again? You know, like, give me why we need this. It's no longer, hey, let's get this. And like the old Ron, yep, let's just get one without looking into it. Now I need a process. How are you going to feed this when it's January and we're, you know, down 10% employees and our seasonal people? Like, how is this going to be paid for?
What did everyone say when you share the reality of the expansion?
When I ask these tough questions, I give them raw, real answers. It's nothing like, hey, nothing you shouldn't know about. I'm giving them this is the data. This is pure data. And it doesn't lie. You know, this is what it looks like to run one press now. And this is what it'll look like to add a press. And then they see the numbers and they're like, we understand. Because they don't come from a business background. They haven't put that in. They just see the day-to-day operations. You know, they don't understand the whole circle it takes to run a company. But when you could start sharing that with your employees, let them be part of the vision and part of the conversation, it really, I think, changes their mindset of how they do their daily job, their tasks, and they could see how they can make it easier for themselves, you know, because you're being transparent with them. You're showing them like, hey, look, you guys, we're ordering five cases of spray tack, for example. Well, they just went up 30%. Well, what does that mean? I'm like, well, here's the cost of what five cases were, and here's 30% increase. And they're like, oh. Because then I'll find cans with like a quarter of them left out in the dumpster. It's like, what, you know, you just can't chuck them up because they're lighter weight. You know, it's just showing them the value of what loss really it looks like. You know, when an ink bucket's thrown out and it's not cleaned out.
I find that those conversations are helpful, but they generally tend to end up talking about profitability a bit, because it's a little bit of like, okay, sure, there's cost. Here's what we're selling it for. But why are we trying to maintain the costs against the ratio to profit to the total sale? Do you share anything about profitability with the team?
I do. And that comes to the circle of when we're getting into like raises, bonuses, it's all in their favor to work as efficiently as they possibly can. And we're humans, so everybody makes errors, but I'm all about rewarding. So our management and supervisors have, here's a budget, you stay within it. If you're under it, that's your money, you know, like keep an eye on this stuff. I can't, you know, we have an app as an extra bonus. It's an added bonus. So if you stay within budget or under anything we're under and there's a gap, that's yours. No question answered, you know, and they've gotten them in the past. They haven't, but now they truly understand like, hey, we should be scraping everything out of the bucket. You know, this shouldn't be overlooked. And are there times things slip? Yes, but there shouldn't be as much waste. Like every time you pull the pallet tape an extra 6 inches and cut it, like add it up. I have my managers like, you know, just add it up in your head. I'm not saying it's going to not happen all the time, but if you didn't have to spend an extra $250 on pallet tape that month over the first quarter, you know, that's $1,000 that could be going into your pocket, you know, and they're like, now I'm understanding, you know? So I'm like, I'm not saying that there's not going to be waste, because that just, it's going to happen. We're humans. We tend to make mistakes, right? But if everybody understands financially where we're at with the company, it gives them more ownership, in my opinion, in all my years, to make them, I have a better culture. They understand what it looks like when we have a good month and a bad month. So they could better understand where we are with the company and where they stand if they're going to be employed, you know?
Yeah. It sounds like you empower a lot of the folks on the financial side. Are you doing some sort of weekly, monthly, quarterly financial update?
I always, with my managers and supervisors, very open about that. We see our dashboards for all of our contract customers, and they're sending you daily numbers. This is how much money we send you per day in work, right? So when we transition the contract, we have a really good idea of what we're going to look like, who needs to be on staff and who doesn't. And we're able to move numbers because there's no cost of goods being sold. Everything's being shipped. So it's labor, supplies, and overhead, like your building and utilities. So it's easier for me to see the numbers and share that, because there's nothing really rocking the boat. I'm not buying 20,000 t-shirts, printing them and selling them, and then having to pay one of the suppliers for the shirts. You know, it's they're sending us the shirts. I got the PO, and then I could figure out, all right, this press could run this many shirts at this time. It's going to require this much ink within a 20-30% ratio. Anything left over, could we use it? So it's a lot of strategizing, but when they see it, they understand, all right, this is why we need more people this week. This is why we need less people the following week. We could get all this work done by Thursday and be off on Friday, which everybody loves, you know? So, and then what it also does is the employees that are shining, the ones that are signing up for the extra hours and putting in the extra effort, when it does come down to the slower times of the year, of course you want to keep the ones that are going, like the ones that aren't hiding in the shadows or putting in extra effort, they're always going to be safe, you know. But the ones that are just kind of getting through the day to day, you know, that's where the hard conversations come when things slow up, because it's like, hey, we're doing layoffs. But the ones that are always taking our advice and following the plan, they're the ones that stay, you know. So that's that.
Have you found that these managers, it sounds like you've got some good quality managers around you. Have you found that they need to come from external, like outside the company, when you say, I need to bring on this manager role? Or can you promote internally? Is it a combination of the two? What have you found work?
You know, I've always been one to promote within, right? And sometimes that doesn't work. It's like an athlete trying to coach. Sometimes they can, sometimes they can't, right? It's a dynamic. But my main manager, she runs the whole company. She started with me when I started growing the company. She was the one sitting on the floor with the phone book, card calling, you know, and she grew the whole company with me. But it wasn't easy for her to take that role. She was good at, you know, getting sales, working with customers, but she didn't know how to manage people. She didn't know how to really talk to people. She didn't understand how personalities worked. So I'm like, hey, let's get you training. So I brought in some trainers, and they worked with our managers and supervisors about positive reinforcement, how to speak to them, how to figure out the ABC psychological, how does this person work better with that person, so that you can make shifts where things aren't polarity. Like everything's just working. Me financially, that investment was easier to bring in someone with experience to train the staff that I already knew the in and outs of the day, but didn't know that specific task of how to manage or supervise. And it's not an easy role to run into, because a lot of them were lateral. They're all the same play. And then all of a sudden you put one of them in charge, and all of a sudden it's like, well, they were just here. Now they're here, and we have to listen to here. And how come I'm not here? We went through those stages. The training that was brought in was the best I could find. It wasn't like some half, you know, thing that you find on the internet. I invest in that because it will give you a return. It gives you a return. I love to promote within. I brought some outside in, and this is a unique industry, and everybody will tell you that it's unique. This isn't like, hey, you're selling a fidget. And it goes from this process to that. We have stuff all from different directions and different niches and different, you know, clientele, from just your regular getting shirts out to high end, you know, traveling artists to professional teams. It's nothing's ever the same. I mean, it's just so bizarre. So bringing in someone with like sales experience from the auto industry, very hard, very hard. Bringing in someone who, you know, and they're hard to train, you know, because this is, again, a unique environment that we're in every day and things change. So I love training everyone through our modules, through our app that was created, you know, for us, where everything has a standard operating procedure. They could cross train themselves at any time of the day or night. If they have the app on their phone, they're able to go in, learn to improve their skills within the company. But the management and supervisor part is a specific set of people I bring in if they're going to go into that program, and they are trained through that program with those individuals so that everyone has the same style. Because it hurts too when you have different managers that favor or do one way. I find as though if there's a company way with a little bit of your personal flair, things always stay the same. When you have two managers with two different ideas, it's like never going to work. It doesn't work.
Internal promotion is a tough bet because of the risk of it not working and of the risk. And then what, right? Cause you know, who wants to be demoted or whatever? It just like, it sours the relationship. But I guess you could say that they wanted that type of role. So maybe it's best to not be at this company. It could be at another company to try to figure that role out too. But
I want them to grow. If it doesn't work here, hey, I gave you skills. We I hope you do well somewhere else.
And they may have, and I guess you're right. Like maybe they would have left anyway because they were looking for more responsibility and it didn't work out. But it's nice that you invested in them. It is a funky gray area to know when you pull the ripcord and when you double down to invest in them. And that's, you know, I don't think there's a golden rule, but that is always a difficult decision.
It doesn't always work out. I've had, you know, printers are like, hey, I want to get in the production manager training or supervisor program. And I'll ask them a series of questions. And I know their work ethic. Do they show up on time? Do they overachieve? Do they work well with others? Are they the one out there barking orders back at other employees that aren't actually management? Are they always trying to troubleshoot? Are they doing everything the company's supposed to be doing? And then I'll have a hard conversation with them. So like I did promote one of my main printers to be a production manager, gave him that super big salary, gave him the company car, paid his benefits. And like 8 months went by and nothing was improving, right? So you have that hard conversation. Hey, this hasn't improved. Actually, we're declining. Our number grade is actually declining in this department. And he's like, real honest with me. I just don't know. I'm overworking. I'm trying to do everything myself. And I said, well, you didn't listen to the training program. You can't do everything yourself. It's all about delegation, time management, you know, and it just didn't work out after a year. So then trying to put him back into production from being up here with everybody down here, he just kind of said, hey, I can't do it mentally. I just don't feel like I could go back down from where I was. And I said, listen, I respect that decision. You go work wherever you want. You're a great human. You know, I want you here, but I understand the struggle. And it was a tough decision because he was with me 10 years. You know, that one hurt. But if he came back tomorrow, I'd be like, hey, pick up where you left off. Like, you know, the company, you know, that's how well-trained they are. It stinks. You're right. Sometimes it doesn't always work out.
You said in COVID, you guys pivoted from roughly 50-50 contract and B2B wholesale stuff to, or direct to consumer stuff to totally contract, 95% contract now. Why that pivot? A lot of the guests that we have on here actually did the opposite. It sounds like you guys doubled down into the contract side.
It just came down to when COVID hit, we were doing all these online stores. You're looking at how much you do in online store sales. Then you look at how much work takes to run an online sale and then what your bottom dollar was. And you're like, yeah, that's really good money, but that's a lot of work. It's a lot of customer service. You run, you know, one of our online stores, say, had 500 customers buy something. That's 500 human contacts that we had to make. And you mess up one, you always hear that bad one, not the 499 other successful ones. So it was a lot of customer service, a lot of front end. When COVID hit, we were mostly in like the local schools. We did all the local big events. And when that all shut down, we were cut. Like 70% of our business was gone. The only business that was there was our 25, 30% of the contract work. They were still pumping it because they sold everything online. They took the risk. We just reaped the rewards by printing and shipping it out on their behalf, split ship, stocking it, shipping it out for them, whatnot. And I found that for me, when COVID hit, you know, you have your line open at your distributors, you know, cost of goods, things just weren't adding up. Like, yeah, you're getting a $3,000 order because I'm in such a competitive area. The markup isn't, you know, like if you're in a smaller area with less printers, I'm in a very heavy populated area of printers. And some guys are racing to the bottom and I'm trying to just be profitable and keep the doors open and make a little bit of money. And when you look, when COVID hit, all right, your S&S balance for this month is here and your profit's here. And I'm like, well, that is a big gap after I paid everything out if you don't have constant work coming and you can't keep that revolving door going. So it really opened my eyes financially. And I'm like, you know, the one thing that's consistent is contract, because when the PO is done, I'm paid immediately and it's for a whole chunk of money with nothing I have to pay otherwise but payroll and overhead and supplies. So there was no paying a vendor anymore. It was here. Here's a $35,000 PO and it's $35,000 cash. No questions asked.
So you like the predictability of it. That was the big draw.
You get a PO, it say it's worth $35,000 or $5,000. You're getting that full $5,000 unless there's a shortage, right? Like you got shipped some short ones. You take off that nominal amount of money, but I'm not paying a vendor for half that order, if not 90% of the order, just to make a little bit of money. You're getting one fat chunk of money every time there's a contract order that comes in.
And you talk about competitors, you know, being very aggressive on the pricing side. Do you do the same? Do you try to be the more expensive one? How do you think about pricing then in terms of being profitable as well, doing majority contract?
Yeah, so the contract, I could get to that. But locally, like the business to business, there's, you know, some really big shops around me. They have a sales force. They go off of more volume versus pricing. They're trying to get everything. I tried that model. It's not really fun. Like you're doing a lot of work for a little, right? So with the contract, I'm a little bit of a different contract shop. I'm not your contract shop working with other shops, taking their work. I work with the more larger merchandise companies. So how that conversation works is, hey, we've seen that you worked in the industry this long. We got a referral from this other merchandise company. We would love for you to partner with us to be one of our printers. These are our seasonal months, and this is what we pay our printers. And I'll review the work. I'll look at the price sheet. And if it financially fits what works for us, I'll take it. And sometimes I look at it, I'm like, we're not an overseas company. I can't make that work. Like I have overhead labor and, you know, this is like overseas pricing. That doesn't work here in the States. So I look at it, we review it as a team, we negotiate it, we come up with a solid pricing model that will work for both company and myself. And then in return, they could send, you know, they'll tell us, we're going to send you $300,000 a year in work, or we're going to send you $2 million a year in work. And their guarantees, none of them have ever come up short, which is beautiful. If anything, they overachieved that number. And then with the market and everything shifting, there has been a big decline in some of them in the last year and a half. And again, you know the pricing, you know your layout, you know what it takes to keep the staff on. So, and I have real clear numbers. So if one customer is sending $5,000 a day in work, that's $25,000 a week in guaranteed work. That's $100,000 a month that I'm guaranteed. So I have $100,000 coming into my account, $50,000 twice a month. That helps me budget. Okay, this is going to be half of this is going to go towards the overhead, you know, mortgage, utilities, whatnot. The other half going to go towards payroll. And that's only one customer. So you add it all together and you just look at your numbers and projections. And I have a very clear vision of what to be expected, what comes in and what needs to be done so that I could keep it moving. Whereas I'm selling to the public, that guy who ordered last year $30,000 worth of hoodies comes up and it's December and you're like having the conversation in August. Hey, December's right around the corner. You want to get your PO? Yeah, you know, this year I'm just going to do like $5,000. Well, how do you make up that gap so quick to keep your budgets going? You know, it was a constant up and down, or the athletic director changed his job and now you have to reset that, you know, expectation with the new guy and set new you know, relationships with new managers or teachers that change. And it just mentally will diffuse you for all these relationship makes, or they now have a cousin that lives 3 hours away that does this, you know, like you hear all the same, we all hear the same stuff. Right. So
it sounds like you don't want to go back.
I do, but respectfully so. Who's to say you can't pick your customers now, right? Who's to say you can't? Not everyone's going to be your customer. And I learned that on both ends. So when people come in, you know, for example, our website, you have to answer questions before we get back to you. It keeps a lot of the rhetoric away. And if you're not willing to answer the little questions we ask, it's probably not a customer we want. You know, we like, how many shirts you need? What color? Do you have a logo yet? When do you need them for? And when could we meet? Very simple questions. You know, instead of answering, I need shirts, and you answer the same thing. So we are more profitable by vetting customers than we were before by taking everything, just because we had to.
When you go to your website, there's this huge pop-up that says, it says, hold up. Are you sure that you're in the right spot? Before you submit this contact form, we want to make sure that you are wanting contract printing and not retail printing. Making sure you're in the right spot will help ensure you get your order faster and easier. And then it says, take me out of here. Yeah, I mean, you're really trying to scare it off.
We're just telling them straight up, like, and then if you are in the one portal, you click that one, and it'll answer you some questions. But we want to tell them, like, hey, make sure you're in the right spot, because if you click the one and not the other, you're going to get different responses. You know, if it's a different form. So we're revamping everything as well. I was fortunate enough to get the actual talkshirtytome.com. You know, so we're doing a lot of rebranding. We are going to kick off a local campaign financially to make up in the slower months. But it's just like, you have to find the customers that work with you, you know, that understand. Not all of them do. You know, we're looking for the more established people that maybe weren't getting better customer service somewhere else. We're a past customer of ours in the past. Maybe we messed up. We're trying to reconnect with customers and say, hey, you know, look, you may think that we are this huge, giant, you know, bigger company in the area, but we still do work with local companies. It's just that, you know, I live in 75,000 people populated area. You know, I don't live in a very big metropolis where there's, you know, a million people where you could just put a hot dog stand on a corner and make 50 grand a year and be happy, right? Like it's a struggle. You have, you know, shops popping up, they're small outfits, and they're all fighting with each other. You know, do I want to get back in that dog fight? I don't know. Do you make money in it? Absolutely. Could I? I will. But it's just, you have to know what you want, right? You have to know what your customer looks like. And I'm not doing like the one-off birthday shirts anymore. You know, it's just not happening.
Do you feel affected by the print-on-demand stuff?
No, you know what? I actually love it. I use some of the resources myself to set up the online stores that I just don't want to print myself. So I'll host it through like Mach 1, for example. I'll put all the logos up there and then they send me a commission and I don't have to print a thing, you know? So I use it as a blessing in disguise, because it doesn't cost me anything to pop up one of their stores. If they sell 10 items, 5 or 1, I'm still getting something, you know? So we use that. The print on demand is great. And again, when I get the request, like, hey, could you make me 3 shirts? I mean, I could rip the DTF, no problem, you know, but we're not really into that, you know? So if I had the small retail shop like I did in the day, yeah, absolutely. I would be like affected by it. Of course, you know, I love it. You know, I love the hustle. I love to see that DTF really helps me fill a niche of being haggled and hassled at my shop for those small quantity runs. I'm like, hey, look, I have a friend. She does this for, you know, as a side gig. Contact her. She could do this. This is her realm. So I'm actually referring them over to other smaller outfits. And then in return, when they get a customer, it works out, because they can't take the 100 piece order because they just can't do it, you know? So it works.
What do you think is your biggest challenge for the rest of the year? That's something that you're focused or thinking about a lot on to work on.
Yeah, you know, it's just, again, the uncertainties, right? You're seeing, like, you come off such a good month and then boom, it's like a dead stop. You're like, what's going on? So my plan is to strategically figure out ways to keep things more consistent in these unweary times, right? So I've been looking at and reaching out to some other coaches to help me personally, where I'll be, you know, going underneath their mentorship to help me find, you know, different ways to scale the business in ways that I can't do. Because I love to educate myself. I love our industry, but sometimes getting outside of the bubble of our industry and bringing in some different outlooks, I always find that to be more nutritious to my education. Whereas I'm, you know, I talk to a certain group of guys, we text all the time and it's great, but we're all battling the same thing. So my focus is to really, we're looking to grow. I'm going to help my company grow. But me is my focus. I have time, which is a gift. I'm going to use that time wisely. I'm going to reach out, find some mentors that are outside the industry, help me grow. Maybe I'm missing something. Maybe I'll learn something I didn't. And in return, I'll be able to help the company get to where they want to go in a different way.
Yeah, gotcha. And that's to help reduce, sounds like, the seasonality or the unpredictability, or just like you said earlier, the funky trends that have been happening recently.
You've had your podcasts. I mean, you know, Steve, like, you get to a certain dollar amount you do every year. Well, how do you get to the next step? And then how do you get to the next step? And I'm right at that teeter where it's like, I'm right there to break it. But why the heck can't I break that number? Why am I stuck right at this plateau? So, you know, reaching out with mentors in our industry, I've gotten some good answers, but I haven't gotten enough quality answers to get me over that hump. So now my ideas, gears are, maybe I should find some mentors that are outside this industry that understand business in a different way. And if I could take what our industry sees and some of the different personalities and outlooks outside our industry, maybe that'll get me that couple hundred thousand to get me over that next hump so I can make that goal and then keep going from there. I'm going to wing it. I'm going to see. Maybe it doesn't work out. I mean, you know, it is what it is, but I'm something. If there's any shops that are looking like, you know, that are, why am I doing this every day? I'm like a true tale of it. I started this in the college dorm, worked for corporate America. I went through this whole thing. But when I decided to do the jump, I didn't really take it serious, right? So I was trying to figure it out on my own. But going to like the shows, reaching out to suppliers, talking to industry leaders, that's what I would have done earlier. I tried to do this all on my own for so long, but I wasn't growing. And the reason why is because I didn't understand. I didn't get it. I was trying to figure it out on my own. It shouldn't be that hard. I mean, everybody talks about this. You could watch every podcast. There's strategies everywhere. So if I was to do something again, I would have reached out earlier in my company years and saved myself a ton of headaches. You know, I hired Ryan years ago and he helped me put together that company app. And he came in and did some consulting. Just those 2 days. And then I brought in a guy, Steve. Just those 2 days that both of those gentlemen sent in our shop saved me years of headaches, right? I would have brought that in earlier, right? And then I consult. I go out to shops. I show them tips. I give them the, you know, I have 20 years in this, in the mud, you know, like from cleaning toilets to printing shirts thousands at a time and working late at night to making things go around. People hire me. I go to their shop. 3 hours, I will save you $5,000. You know, just 3 hours of me being there, I will save you $5,000 in your shop. It's just simple stuff that you don't know unless you went through it. So if I was to do it again, I'd find someone like myself or another industry leader that could really save you money and just help you build right from day one instead of trying to figure it out. You know, I kind of like golf and laugh when you see the people like making a homemade washout tank. Look, just call Easy Way, get a goddamn washout tank and don't even waste all those hours you took building it. It's going to be the same price and it's going to work way better. And then when OSHA shows up, they're like, what the hell is that? You know, like, just do it right. Right. And I love the DIYs. I was a DIY guy myself, but I wasted more time doing it than if I just did it right the first time, you know, so I would have reached out earlier and saved all of that, you know, all of it.
I love that. I really believe in that and didn't do that enough either, which is reaching out for coaching help, for peer group help, for, you know, some people call it mentorship. I just think it's like, hey, give me the expert, give me the best known person, give me a group that I can sound stuff off on. Those are two different things, but use that to be able to help elevate quicker and waste less time?
When I was trying to figure it out on my own, I showed up at a shop in Binghamton. It was Dylan's up at Upstate Merch. And I'm like, became best buds because he had someone to bang ideas off of. I had the business side. He had the print side. I didn't know what the hell I was doing on the print side. I just started a print business. And we had a relationship because there were some things that he wasn't aware of on like sales and marketing and all of that. Whereas he knew how to run a print shop and print shirts and talk to shops and get different. So for like that, that's a 17-year friend relationship that was found on Craigslist. Weird enough, buying a piece of equipment off of him. So he was like my first peer resident where we were able to talk and grow together and not step in each other's arena. You know, we never had any polarity between each other because we were just looking to grow our shops. He was geared one way, I was geared one way, and sometimes two different types of people in industry help you grow. And it's a cool thing, you know, really cool thing.
I like it. Ron at We Talk Shirty, thanks so much for joining us out of Scranton, Pennsylvania. We appreciate you guys. If anyone wants to reach out or have questions, can they shoot you an email?
Oh, they could hit me on Instagram. I'll answer in the messages. Reach out to our page, send me a message anytime. I'm always up to chat about the shop. No problem.
Love it. Thanks, Pronesters, for being able to join us. We'll see you guys on the next episode. Thanks so much for listening. Hopefully that was informative. Don't forget to subscribe. Don't forget to like. Don't forget to hit the bell for notifications if you enjoyed this video. If you enjoy all the stuff we're putting out, it's really helpful. We love to just be able to see it. That means that we're doing a good job. To subscribe, hit the bell for notifications and hit the like button. And I'll see you in the next episode. Bye.